All right, let's keep this party going, Jeffrey, because there's still lots and lots and lots of comments and questions. So,
and while you're, yeah,
here we go. Yeah, I got it. I've got one. No, I know sometimes I'm like a little slow on the click, but if Joey Votto does have an MVP like season, and what if he wins it? How do they not pick up his option in 2024? There's a lot of interesting what ifs surrounding Joey Votto and his option for 2024. But I will tell you this, if he wins the MVP, yeah, they're probably not going to have a choice. They're going to have to do it. Anything short of that, though, I don't see them picking up this option. Now, I'm not completely, you know, down on the idea that somewhere along the way, if Votto is having a good year, that they may work some kind of renegotiation where they don't pick up that option, but they decline it and he signs a new contract. I could see deals being worked out. A deal that pays Votto more than the buyout, but less than what he would make on the option, and keep him in Cincinnati and not have to go through the PR nightmare that would be involved in Joey going signing someplace else. But I don't see them picking up the option in any other scenario than this, that he wins the MVP.
That's kind of what I'm thinking. And if he's having an MVP level season, how many games is just Phil Castellini and Bob Castellini going to be sitting up there in the owner's suite, just like downing as much bourbon as they possibly can? Like, seriously, you're going to win the MVP of the year that we have to decide whether or not we're going to pick up another $20 million on your contract? Like, I would love that for Joey. And I would love that as a Reds fan, because it's just like, yes, it's what they deserve. But you know, for a fact, for the season, they're going to be sitting there watching him and just being like, oh my gosh, we were trying to figure out how we were going to keep him on the cheap. No, we can't. We can't. Because if he wins the MVP, you're not turning down that option.
I can't wait to get your take on this next one, Jeff. Chad, the quirky picker, says, often when a player struggles for a long period of time and then comes out and says that they were injured the whole time and playing through it, he says it just sounds like a lame excuse. Well, if you're talking about Joey, then he would have had to fake a total reconstruction of his shoulder and bicep. So, if you're thinking conspiracy theory, it wasn't a real injury, I don't think that's true. So that tells me the injury is real.
I think with
Jonathan India, same story. He was hurt. He had to be life flighted to a hospital from Field of Dreams game. Yeah, that injury was real. So in both of these cases, I think there's no, these were real injuries. And I guarantee you a shoulder and bicep injury that Votto had to have rebuilt definitely contributed to the downtrend in his performance.
And I think for the most part, because this is about one or two people, or one or three people, really. It's either Joey or India or Tyler Stevenson. And I think in all three cases, that was absolutely true. I don't see any scenario in which Jonathan India was trying to make an excuse for his performance. Like they were reporting, I know that David Bell was reporting at the winter meetings that Jonathan India was already working at that point to get ready for the season. And in David Bell's words, quoting Jonathan India, he says, I'm going to have a better year than my rookie of the year season. So like he's not, there's no lame excuses here. Like that's a lame excuse that I make when I play a pickup game of basketball, or, and let's be honest, when I play golf, I do a lot more of that than I play pickup basketball. You know, like, oh man, oh yeah, just, you know, back's real tight. That was a rough swing right there. I'll play through it. I'll be all right. It's like, yeah, no, that's a lame excuse.
BR7 says that Tyler Stevenson is one of the top 10 catchers in Major League Baseball. I mean, I think we all agree with that. I think I saw something from MLB in the last couple of days that actually had him listed as the 10th best catcher in Major League Baseball. That might be a show topic somewhere before spring training, is where some of these guys actually rank within the rest of baseball, Jeff.
I think that he is going to prove, because I think that that's conservative. I think he's a top five catcher if he's healthy, because I think that the catcher position as a whole is kind of light on talent. And I think that if he is healthy and he plays a whole year and he plays as well as we think he can, people are going to be like, okay, this dude is a stud and he's going to show it.
Debbie Brown checks in. Hey, Debbie. She says she saw an interview with Tyler last night. He's in Arizona already. I think a bunch of the guys are out there. There's a couple things going on in Arizona right now. One of them being the Super Bowl. Damn Chiefs. at the other, there's a couple other events as well. So I know that getting into housing, getting into, you know, Airbnbs, getting into Arizona has been a challenge for a lot of people. And I think a lot of guys went early to be able to secure their places and lock things down. So there's that. And then I think Tyler is pretty notably early the last several years. So, you know, he's the head of that catcher room group position. So it's good that he's out there to work with the pitchers.
Yeah. I'm still going to find a good one for that. I think that people like to talk about, you know, ownership, not trying and not putting money into the team. And so they're just going to keep losing games, but we discount the fact that these players took 100 losses personally. Like they ended the season and they're like, this is not the reason that we became professional ball players. We didn't come here to collect a check and not do anything. And so I think that they ended the season, other than the physical obstacles, which they had of like different injuries and things like that, I think their mind was just like, no, we want to fix this. We want to play some more. So I think that there's been some guys that have been out there, especially those that are coming back from injury, like Tyler, who've probably been in Arizona for a couple of weeks now.
Poofy haired fancy boy checks in, Jeff. He wants coming. The blackouts to be lifted. And you and I talked about this week on an episode, and I've gotten a lot of questions in the DMs and in the comment section of that episode, you know, asking when all this is going to happen. So, you know, poofy haired fancy boy, we are ready for the blackouts to be lifted as well. It's not going to be this season, folks. I really don't think so. What's going to happen is this bankruptcy filing is coming. It will happen sometime this year. It's going to have to play through bankruptcy court. All of the things are going to have to happen. So talking to the broadcast team, they're all preparing business as usual, not doing anything different than they normally do. I suspect whatever changes we see would be for the 2024 baseball season, as far as new streaming options, you know, no blackouts, those kind of things.
I think I don't necessarily have an alternate take from that, but I am encouraged by a couple of different things. Like Forbes was reporting that the Bally's is going to look to do the restructuring after the NBA playoffs. So about May, June, somewhere about there. So when that happens, it's likely that they will say, okay, we're going to keep it business as usual for the rest of the season or the rest of the year, and then we're going to figure it out. Because I don't think they can switch it mid-season like that into something streaming, but I know that it's coming. Major League Baseball is prepared for this. That's why they hired Billy Chambers as the director of local media. And they hired him from Sinclair. So he's done the job that he's already in before just for running Bally. So I think that overall, this is the kind of thing that's going to happen sooner rather than later. I think there's a small chance it could happen the second half of the season, but it's not going to happen anytime before June.
Greg checks in and says that he thinks Stevenson is the long-term replacement for Votto, and he said that when Stevenson was drafted, he's too tall to play catcher forever. There's a lot there. Okay. I don't think that Stevenson right now is the long-term plan at first base. I think ultimately if he can't catch anymore and they're just going to stick him somewhere full-time, it'll be DH at some point. Keep that bat healthy and in the lineup. I think that CES has a much better chance of being the long-term replacement for Joey Votto at first base.
I would agree with that. And I think that, you know, there's definitely still going to be the ability for him to move into first base if need be, like maybe CES needs an off day or somebody needs an off day, and they probably will keep him as at least on like a depth chart as like a backup catcher. So he can still get behind the plate every so often. And we know from talking to him, he loves catching. This isn't like a situation where he himself is looking forward to getting out from behind the plate. He fancies himself a catcher. So this is going to be something that when they ask him about what he wants to do, I think sure he's going to go along with the plan of mixing in other positions and really trying to keep his bat in the lineup every day. But at the end of the day, he's a catcher.
BR7 trying to help with some names for this catcher's room. He's got catcher's cave. You know, holy crap, Batman, let's get back to the catcher's cave, he says. No, catcher's nest. Keep trying, guys. We can do better than this. Come on. If the Reds are in the hunt for the playoffs this year at the deadline, should they be active in the trade market to help their chances or just stick with the current plan and roster? Oh my goodness. Listen, I have said they could be the outside cusp of the final wild card spot. They should trade away absolutely nothing to secure the final wild card spot. They should continue to build. If there's a deal with somebody that's more of a contender where they could make some kind of a trade and package a dude and get somebody, maybe, but just to trade to be competitive for the final wild card, I'm gonna be a no on that, Jeff.
I think, and it was the most frustrating thing in the world, even for, you know, an outsider's perspective for the Orioles fans. But last year, the Orioles were the most frustrating team at the trade deadline because they had clear needs. And instead of addressing those needs, they traded away their closer and they traded away their first baseman, their best hitter. And everybody was just like, what the heck? And they still remained in the playoff race up until the very end, even with those trades. But the Orioles looked at it and they said, this is fun, but we don't see this as our window. Our window opens next year. I think in the Reds' case, if we are talking about that kind of an awesome thing, which is, it's a bit of a bummer to say because we want them to be in a playoff position, but if they are in a playoff position at the trade deadline, any move they make needs to be done with the lens of we're looking at next year, not necessarily looking at this year. Like, and this is an example, I'm talking about the on-field example of this trade, but whenever the Reds went and they traded for Trevor Bauer, they didn't trade for Trevor Bauer for 2019. They traded for him for 2020. So I think that that's what the move would be if they are to make a move at the deadline. But I would think that the chances of them being a buyer at the deadline, given everything that has to happen and every, you know, and given the plans for the future and stuff like that, the chances are greater than zero, but I think less than one.
And, you know, Jim comes with something that we see a lot. And, you know, I want to dig into this for just a second. He's like, playoffs with this team? No way, sadly. Listen, if I had to put money on it, I agree with you, Jim. They're not going to make the playoffs this year. But I don't think they're going to be as bad as everybody thinks they're going to be. There's a lot of room for growth over last season, and there's a lot of wild cards at play now that we're not quite sure how it's going to impact everything. We don't know how the shift is going to, and the ban of the shift is going to result in player performance. We're not sure what that looks like. We're not sure what the changes to the bases and maybe the increased running game is going to look like, because that will benefit the Reds in a couple cases. There are some guys that can steal bases if that's something they decide they're going to commit to and do. And that's something baseball is looking for. So I could see it happening in Cincinnati. You know, this team won 62 games last year, Jeff, with more injuries than the team's ever had in the history of baseball, and using more players than they've ever used in the history of baseball. And all of those things, I just can't see them being replicated. It can't be that bad again. The Reds fired their training staff. They brought in new people on the medical side of things. They're going to be healthier. Now, I'm not saying they're not going to be hurt at times. That's going to happen. It's a 162 game season. There will be injuries, but there will not be injuries to the extent that there were last year. All of those things look to make, just by default, the Reds win more than 62 games. Now, there are some equalizers. It's a different kind of schedule this year. Rather than being division heavy, everybody is playing everyone. So the Reds will play some more good teams. So that can have an impact. But, you know, Jeff, you've come down at 75. I don't know that that's exactly realistic. But the final results of my poll from Twitter with the 65.5 over under, 65%, I'm not making that up, 65% of the voters took the over 65. So there is some optimism out there about the number of wins that this team can put together. And again, I'm not being like, you're going to the playoffs. It's not what I'm saying. But there, I don't think they lose 100 games in 2023.
Yeah, Jim definitely has a point. I think you have to hit the 99th percentile outcome for every single player on this roster. And you also include the fact that Ellie De La Cruz comes up and lights the world on fire almost more so than we're thinking he might. You might have a couple of key call-ups of pitchers that absolutely hit, like, every one of them. Everything has to hit. All of the question marks have to be answered with a resounding yes in order for the Reds to make the playoffs. But you don't have to have all of those things go right to be a better team. There are so many people out there that are predicting this team, and we still have it, and I still have it up here. I think it's just more so for motivation for you and me, but that weird power ranking scene that they came out with, you know, whatever, like a month or two ago, where they said, hey, the Reds are going to lose the most games in the history of their franchise this year. That's not happening. It's just not. They're better and they're healthier. They're going to win. Like I keep saying 75, and I know that people say that that's way, way too optimistic, but is it really that far-fetched to think that this team could win 66, 67 games? They'd hit the over if they did.
Absolutely. And listen, a lot of people agree with this take, Jeff. I'm just going to blow through a few of these. Poofy-haired fancy boy says, you know, he thinks the Reds are going to surprise a lot of people this year. You know, Austin saying he doubts they make the playoffs, but anything can happen. Mark says in our division, anything is possible. This is true. I mean, let's not get carried away with what the rest of this division looks like. There's been some improvement, but it's not, you know, it's not the Mets. And then Austin comes back with this, Jeff. I don't see why the Reds couldn't be this year's Orioles, especially since we have better pitching than they did. This is a pretty good take. I think this is a really good comparison of what the Reds could do in 2023 if a lot of the ifs work out, if a lot of those things that you just mentioned actually happen in 2023.
And I think it's important too, like even just thinking about the comparison between the Orioles from last year and the Reds this year, is that much of baseball outside of Cincinnati is looking at the Reds roster and going, who? Let me ask you this, Steve. Outside of Trey Mancini, what Baltimore Orioles player could you name from last year?
Cionel Perez.
That's right. He was on there. And he pitched really, really well.
He pitched really good.
Cionel Perez. Oh, my gosh. What a
bet you didn't think we were going to get him in the show today.
Hey, look at that. We fit him in there. I mean, heck, we fit Willie Green in an episode last week. Their possibilities are endless.
Poofy has come back with, do we think the Reds will be better than the Cubs and the Pirates? It's probably a whole show coming, right? We got a whole show coming on this at some point.
We definitely have division previews coming, but I think hot take out of that, because it's very easy to say, yes, the Reds will be better than the Pirates. I think it's going to be easier to be better than the Cubs than the Pirates this year. I think the Pirates,
I kind of agree with that. I think the Pirates are going to be surprisingly good. They've done some things. And listen, they haven't made very many splash moves. They did the move that we thought the Reds should do, bringing back a former player so they could at least have a press conference with yep. McCutcheon. But beyond that,
well, and they did the other move that we thought we should do is and get the veteran presence in the rotation. Although Rich Hill's about 712 years old, but still, they got the veteran presence.
But they did it, yeah. So. They didn't make splash moves, but they're going to be a little bit better. And with their young talent, you know, I'm just saying this division is
it's winnable.
One, not as bad as everybody thinks it is. And two, I think the take that in this division, anything can happen is the correct take. I think that there's not really a class of the division. I mean, you may say St. Louis, but I think they've got their own problems. And if the money situation is what it really looks like it's going to be with them coming up, with the biggest impact of losing the regional sports revenue, they may look to move some guys and clear a contract or two. So
they did not go big this year. Like everybody,
they did not. So I would say, you know, never say never as far as where the Reds could finish in this division in 2023.
When I think, especially like the Cardinals are not deep. I mean, they are a Paul Goldschmidt injury away from their lineup being pedestrian.
Jim, I feel like you're I know where you're coming from, and I get you in, and I'm with you in a lot of regards. This team has beat you up. I can tell this team has beat a lot of us up. And, you know, this comment from Jim, the Cubs, Pirates, Cards, and Brewers made deals to get quality MLB players to help them. The Reds traded for prospects and have not addressed the bullpen. Okay. Well, I mean, you know, everybody did make moves. The Reds did not really address the bullpen because I think, they're going to address the bullpen from within, and guys that were starters last year are going to be added to the bullpen along with the guys coming back from injury. There's a lot of quality arms coming back from injury. So that's just addition by subtraction of the guys that should have never been in the major leagues last year. So is the Reds bullpen as bad as it was last year? I don't think so. Is it stellar? Is it lights out? Do we really know exactly what we're going to get? No, none of those things are true. So I get where you're coming from, Jim, but I'm just open your heart to the possibility that this team might be a little bit better than you think.
I definitely agree. And there's a thought that I also have about the Milwaukee Brewers, Steve. And let me start it by asking you a question. How did the Reds handle the situation with Luis Castillo and his contract?
They handled it poorly. They didn't address it when they should have. And as a result, Kral made a good trade. But I think there was an opportunity. They could have actually kept him around if they had done it early and been aggressive.
The Milwaukee Brewers were not paying attention because they are doing the exact same thing with Corbin Burnes. Corbin Burnes wants to stay in Milwaukee. They have not offered him a contract yet. In fact, I think they went to arbitration with him. They didn't even like do a 1-year deal to avoid arbitration. So they are coming into a time because, yes, you look at that rotation, you say, okay, you've got Burnes, Woodruff, and Peralta. That team's not going to be bad as long as those three guys are there. But if around the deadline this year they trade Corbin Burnes, the Brewers could, in fact, be one of those teams in the hodgepodge with the Reds, Pirates, and Cubs as to what are they going to be? Are they going to be a 70-win team? Are they going to be a 65-win team? Are they going to be a 75-win team? Are they going to be an 80-win team? There's so many questions, and I don't think the Reds fit into an 80-win team, but there's so many questions about the teams that are ahead of the Reds that are not named the Cardinals. That this division, it's going to be competitive looking because everybody's going to finish very close to each other. It's not going to be a situation where you've got one team that is just super far out of it. And you're also going to have teams that you expect to be good that are not going to be that good. And I think the Brewers are the prime candidate for that.
Seth Pryor checks in and says that he had Spencer Steer penciled in as the opening day third baseman, but now he is most likely to start at first base. And it's question mark. I don't know that that's true.
He's hurt, maybe.
Well, maybe. And you know, as we've talked about today, Jeff, there are a couple guys that could make a case to fight their way onto this roster. And then that changes everything. I guess if we have to look at it through the lens of no surprise promotions of prospects, rolling with the roster that we think they're going to have, if Joey's healthy, he's the first baseman. If he's not, then maybe you probably have a little bit more flexibility of guys that can play third base, and you shift Spencer Steer over there, who has seen some time there as recently as last season. So I could see that. I'll say this, Spencer Steer, I really do think he's going to become a full-time player without a dedicated position. He is going to be that super utility that we've been saying they've needed for a while. I think he plays 6 days a week, but he plays at 6 different spots, nearly, maybe 5 different positions to get his full-time at-bats. And I'm okay with that. I think he, you know, when I sat down with him, you know, he said he likes moving around. He enjoys playing the different spots. And, you know, he is definitely a guy that just wants to be on the field, and he doesn't really care where that is. So, you know, I like guys like that, and I think he's very useful. And I think it's a great addition to this roster to have him be that guy that just moves around and kind of gives everybody a day off and plays all of the positions fairly well.
And he's a talented player as well. I think it was either MLB Pipeline or ESPN. I'm blanking on which of the two, but it was one of the two that had him in the just missed being a top 100 prospect list, like the guys who were just on the outside looking in, because they understand like he's got that kind of talent. And you're right, that is his, I think, the ultimate plan for Spencer Steer is to be that first guy off the bench slash can start anywhere to give someone else a day off. And at the end of the day, I think that we were liking him at third base based on how this roster is shaping out. But as spring training has shown us, there's going to be injuries and there's going to be some changes to what we expect here in January. So there's a possibility he plays somewhere else. I definitely see that happening, and I'm not bothered by that.
Well, we've reached the point in the show where I think Jeff is going to offend a whole country, but let's see how this plays out, because Valentin checks in from France and says, thank you guys for all of the stuff and making the Reds lovable all around the world. Are you going to do a French accent, Jeff? Are you going to do it?
I don't have a French accent, although it's okay, funny because
I'm so glad. I thought for sure we were going to lose a whole country.
My wife can speak a little bit of French. I cannot. So I'm not even going to try. But thank you for checking in. Appreciate that.
Yeah, I love it. We've got guys worldwide following the Red Legs, Jeff. I love it.
People are hungry for this team, even if it's outside of Cincinnati. They're hungry for this team. Just waiting. And we've talked about that before. That is what the Reds are asking us to do. They're just asking us to wait. because they don't want to spend the money that we would like them to spend. So you either spend money or you spend time, and they're spending time.
Bo Dryson checks in and asks about Austin Hendrick. How's he coming along? Just curious if we know how his progress is going. Well, he was out on tour, Jeff. He was on the caravan, wasn't he? So I guess he that was. Says something about.
And how it's he's telling. Doing. It's telling in a lot of different ways that when you look at top prospect lists, and I'm not even talking about top 100. I'm talking about organizational rankings. Like he keeps falling down that list, man. Like he has trouble staying healthy for one, and when he is healthy, he has little to no plate discipline. So
yeah, he's having some serious strike zone problems.
Yeah, that's a profile that's not going to grow very well. So I really hope that he can turn it around here, and maybe he's a late bloomer. Maybe he's not a guy that, you know, works quickly through the system. But as it stands right now, he's kind of off the radar and off of the, you know, we talk about waves, and, you know, we've got our first wave going on. We got our second wave coming up. I don't know where he fits in any of that.
I'm going to throw this up. Jim's asking about the trading of a prospect for an outfielder. We did hear that from Nick Kroll earlier in the offseason, and we haven't heard a whole lot about it since then. Jim's speculating about a deal with Arroyo. I think it would take a lot for them to move Arroyo. I don't know that at this point they're going to go do a big splash deal packaging prospects for an outfielder. I think we've got the outfield we're going to open with. We talked about that earlier this week, Jeff. I suspect that, that was an idea that was being floated around. That was a conversation starter amongst the general managers. But I think that's probably a situation where that ship has sailed already.
Well, and I think, too, that remember the reports on the Luis Castillo trade were that the Mariners and the Reds actually started talking about that like a year ahead of time. And so I think that Nick Kroll is the kind of guy that when he starts a negotiation, he kind of slow plays it a little bit. So I think that there's probably still, you know, plans, and they're still working on a possible prospect for prospect deal. The only thing is, if I look at that trade, I actually look at that through the Dodgers lens and I say, I'm not doing it, because Pahez is ready to come up now. And I think that they kind of need some outfield help. They didn't go get anybody this offseason. I mean, I think they got JD Martinez, but JD Martinez is a DH. Like they definitely still need outfield depth. And if anybody gets hurt, Pahez is going to be the first guy that gets called up and gets into the lineup. So I think that move, and while Edwin Arroyo is a very tantalizing prospect, and yes, the Reds do value him very highly, and so does everybody else. He's up on everybody's top 100 prospect list. So there's that. But also, I just think that the Dodgers overall wouldn't really like to do that trade.
I'm going to take a little side trip here, Jeff, just because I'm the one controlling the clicker. Seth says college baseball season is less than 3 weeks away. If you're looking for a baseball fix while you're waiting for the Major League Baseball regular season to get started, check out some college baseball. And if you're wondering how to do that, ESPN Plus, it's one of my favorite streamers out there. They have lots of stuff between the hockey and the college baseball, lots of live stuff. But college baseball, a lot of it on ESPN Plus. And a lot of University of Hawaii baseball for that late night crowd out there. It is so much fun watching baseball. There was a time, Jeff, when before like the SEC baseball stadiums expanded, before they built more professional size stadiums in college baseball, there was a time when the University of Hawaii led the country in attendance for multiple years, because there's not a lot of baseball out here, and people come out to the stadium in Manoa and watch this baseball. It is a fun product. Check it out. End of side trip. Sorry.
No, and I love me some college baseball too. Plus he has the UK logo on there, so he knows about the SEC. And I mean, we always talk about the SEC when it comes to like football and basketball, but there is no discussion when it comes to college baseball. SEC is the best. I mean, SEC might be some folks have equated it to like low A as far as the level of competition. So yeah,
there's a lot of talent. A lot of talent has come out of there. Scott Campbell is with us. Aloha, Scott Campbell. Ooh. How you doing, Scott? I finally saw your video, by the way. Jeff showed it to me. Nice work, Scott Campbell, in talking with Nick Kroll, asking him to come on the show. A letter is in the mail, guys, to the Reds front office. We're going to invite
postal Nick service.
I know, right? We are inviting Nick Kroll onto the show. We'll see what he does. But he's getting an official invite to come on and talk to you guys about Reds baseball. So we'll see what happens with that. We're trying our best. We're doing what we can. Whatever this name, what is this? Back, whatever. I'm going to say it right. He says, how's it going, guys? He found out about the show from his dad, and he's been listening for a few weeks now since he showed. Hey, the next generations of Reds fans coming on board. I love it. We appreciate you being here. This is my favorite show of the week, guys, talking with you all. Love hearing
about baseball. Picture looks like Simon Cowell.
It does, right? I don't know. These YouTube usernames are great. I'll tell you what.
Yeah.
Jim's asking about ticket prices. Did they go down trying to bring fans back? No, not really. They didn't go down. I just bought a bunch of seats for while I'm in town.
You know
for
opening week. You know what you do with that, though, Jim, is you got to check out like Game Time, SeatGeek. There's a couple of different apps that base ticket prices off of demand, and especially close to first pitch, you're going to see those ticket prices be pretty cheap. And then what you do is you buy a, view level or outer view level or bleacher ticket or something like that. And then you go stand at the handlebar and you have yourself a good time, because there's been many a time that I buy a cheap bow tie. Gosh, I always flip those two. Bow tie bar. But you buy yourself the cheapest ticket, and then midway through the game, you spot out the sections that are pretty empty, and the ushers are just kind of, doing whatever.
Why are you giving away all of our secrets? What are you doing?
Oh, come on. There's not going to be enough people that run down to the stadium and take over. So that's not going to. I'm just going to tell everybody here watching that's how you do it, and we're not going to. That plan's not going
to
get killed.
We don't ever do that. What? God, Jeff. Jesus, I need to be able to mute your mic. If you're wondering about that bow tie bar view, I actually posted a picture on Twitter of that today. If you just scroll back like two or three posts in my feed right now, see my favorite spot in Great American Ballpark. I go to that spot and watch part of a game pretty much every single time I'm in the stadium. I love it down there. I really do. It's a great spot.
We're less than 60 days away. I'm not
serious question. Why won't any of the Reds brass come on the show? Well, I'll listen, to be honest, we have not extended an official invite to any big names within the Reds front office until now. We are inviting Nick Kroll onto the show. Not sure what's going to happen with that. We're going directly to him in an attempt to have him come on. We are more than happy to talk to anybody from Castellini's on down. Within the Reds front office about what's going on with this team. And I know that, I have a couple running jokes and, Jeff plays along with those things, but, we're definitely willing to sit down and do a serious interview with any of these guys to get them on and give them the ability to talk directly to you folks. So, we'll do whatever it takes to make that happen. If we have to agree to questions ahead of time, if we have to, spell the whole thing out, we'll do whatever it takes. So, and I have communicated that to the Reds front office. So we'll see what happens, guys. I mean, anything is possible. I think Nick Kroll has done a better job this offseason with his media relations. I think he's been working on that a little bit. So maybe he will come do a podcast or two around Reds country, and maybe we'll be one of them. So we are definitely trying to make that happen for you guys.
Yeah, it's definitely on us, not necessarily on any of them, just because we haven't extended the invitation just yet. We weren't really sure how they view us, but I think that they view us well.
Maybe. I'm still kind maybe of scrolling here, Jeff. Sorry. going. Sorry, guys.
I will say this while you're looking there. I'll circle back on something. We talked about Dayton a little bit earlier, and I cannot stress enough how much fun it is to go to a Dragons game, but also there's this great little spot. And if you're inside Dayton, you're probably just like, yeah, you're telling me something that I already know. But if you live outside of Dayton and you go to a Dragons game, there's a spot a couple of blocks from the ballpark called the Century. And if you like yourself some bourbon, there is better place in Southwest Ohio to go get you some bourbon, because the Century is awesome. They have just about everything you can think of, and they got great prices too. So get you a go to a Dragons game. That's a little bit of, free advertising, but I love the Century. I can't wait to get
back. Should we talk about our bar tabs from the last time you and I were there together? No. We found the high-end stuff, folks. Let me tell you. We wandered into every one of those things. It was so good. Mr. Juan, checks in and asks, how confident are we that Graham Ashcraft can match his rookie year? His low strikeout and high ground ball rate make me worry that the shift ban will hurt him. This is a pretty good question.
Yeah, it's not something we've really touched on a whole lot because we talk about the shift ban and how it's going to help hitters. But yeah, a guy like Graham Ashcraft, whose mantra is get in and out of the inning as quick as you possibly can by pitching to contact, making hitters get themselves out. It's going to be interesting to see how that does affect him because you're right. I mean, he's not a strikeout guy, and that's not been his MO as he's gone up through the minor leagues. Like it's not like he got to the major leagues and all of a sudden stopped striking people out. The way that he pitches, and I love the way that he pitches because it's so different from Nick Lodolo and Hunter Green, but I do wonder how that shift's going to play up because the BABIP's a big thing with him, and if he's got a lot of BABIP, it's going to be tough.
Listen, I will say this, and I'm not one to speculate on if players can remain healthy or not. We just hope that they all do. But, you know, I've had conversations with people close to the Reds organization that are a little concerned about Ashcraft's ability to remain healthy for an entire year. And that stems from, you know, if you recall, Graham Ashcraft really wasn't on a lot of people's radars. And then all of the sudden he was, and that coincided from working with Kyle Bodhi and basically becoming a max effort, max spin kind of guy. And that pitching philosophy has shown to have tremendous success, but also puts a lot of wear and tear on the pitcher that's doing it. So my hope is that he is engaged in a great offseason workout program, got himself strong, got himself ready, and that he can sustain that max effort for an entire Major League Baseball season. But we saw last year he ran out of gas, and the Reds, I think, did him a disservice by bringing him back. And I know at the end of the year there was really nobody else to pitch, and that's why they did it. But I think they did a disservice by not just shutting him down when he was clearly done for the year and just letting him work on his offseason and get ready to go. So I think this is a great question. And I think there is some concern to what Graham Ashcraft can do over the course of an entire year and not run out of innings before we reach the end of the season.
And I'd be curious too to see just how he develops this season, if he is able to pitch at 85%, 80% sometimes, like especially when there's nobody on base. I know that was a big thing that you know, Chris Welsh and Jeff Brantley have been talking on the broadcast, is that this idea that you can go out every single pitch and just throw it and go as hard as you possibly can and do that over 100 times. That's why you see so many pitchers only throwing 4.5-5 innings when they start. And that's why you see some people saying, well, we need to amend the rule on pitcher wins and things like that, which that's a different discussion. But that's where that stems from, is that there are so many pitchers now that have trained that way. And I think that it's going to be important to see how that idea kind of circles back a little bit, because everything's circular, right? I mean, you know, we see different things happen and then the converse happens and we kind of reset a little bit. How is pitching going to reset? Because the idea of just throwing everything you possibly have in your first inning pitches, your second inning pitches, your third inning pitches, your fourth inning pitches, whether there's guys on base, whether the bases are loaded, it's just not feasible. That's not going to give you a long career.
All right, Jeff, we're coming to the finish line here. Let's try and work our way through a few more of these really quick. Poofy wants to know about your hat. Where'd you get that fedora, Jeff?
It's on a website called Coolie Bar. I'm gonna see if it's, yeah, Coolie Bar. That's how you spell
it. That's your golf hat, right?
It's my golf hat. It's got like the whole UPF thing, keeps the sun off me, all that good stuff.
Plus, BR7 says that BR7 says you should be in black and white because you look like you fell out of an Elvis movie. Do you do an Elvis impersonation? Don't. Oh. Don't do it.
Like half laughing through that.
Almost ago. Do you play MLB The Show, Jeff?
I do. That's a question. I actually haven't got the new one just yet, but I don't think the new one's out, but once the new one comes out, I'll be getting it.
Chad, defending his position, says he wasn't talking about players that we know are injured. Yeah, I mean, okay, I'll double down on this a little bit and just say that with the pitchers, like we were just talking about, a bunch of the injuries that occurred to the starting pitchers towards the end of the year were just innings management and them being tired. So yeah, okay, they ran out of gas, so they're hurt. They had inflamed ERAs and they had to go on the injured list. So okay, I'll give you that, Chad. I mean, that okay, that does happen.
I'm trying to think, there was a, I think it was more of a football thing, but oh no, I remember that now. You remember, and this is a Bengals reference. Sorry for anybody that's not a Bengals fan, but do you remember Randy Bullock coming up with that hamstring injury after he missed an extra point that ended up losing the Bengals the game? It was a couple of years ago against Oakland, I think. Anyway, yeah, that's where I'm thinking, like, yeah, you got a fucking injury there because you cost the team the game by not making an extra point. So
there's a little conversation in here about MLB TV. I think there's going to be a lot of changes to MLB TV once all of this sorts out with the bankruptcies and such. But you know, Debbie Brown mentions that, you know, she has an MLB subscription and she can watch all the games. The blackout games just come on after, that way you don't miss a game. That's the way I do it also, especially for day games. You know, we talked about the Peacock game, Reds versus Yankees, that starts at like 11:30 in Cincinnati. Listen, folks, that's 5:30 in the morning here. I love the Reds, but I am not getting up at 5:30 to watch that game. I will watch it on MLB TV on delay. Another one of the questions in here about MLB TV is if the price goes up when they end blackouts, probably, and I'll pay it if I don't have to like work technology magic to watch all the West Coast games. I'll pay a little bit extra to get MLB TV.
If we get to the point and Major League Baseball and Rob Manfred knows this, but they have to do this, because if we get to the point where you can get on MLB TV and you can literally go seamlessly between every game and you don't have to worry about blackouts and things like that, it's going to increase the popularity of the sport. I mean, it's a 1+1 deal. That's not a, oh, hey, you're looking at this from a really interesting angle. It's like, no, this is straight on right there. You get rid of the blackouts, you grow the sport, end of story.
All right, we're going to take one more, folks. We're at the hour 17 almost mark here, hour 15 minutes.
Appreciate you guys, are fantastic. Joining us today.
We could, awesome. I tell you, Jeff, one day I think we're going to do just talk till we drop. I think one day, not today, but one day we're just going to start this thing and go until there are no more questions. I'm just kind of interested to see where we end up. We have to have like order DoorDash and have some food brought in or something. But for today, we're going to take one more, and I think it's an interesting one. We're going to go to Pat, who wants to know about Stuart Fairchild. Do we think that Stuart Fairchild is underrated right now? We talked about him the other day, right? I don't think that he is, and I don't even think he's going to make this roster now with the outfield moves that they made.
You know who Stuart Fairchild is? He's Jose Siri. You remember Jose Siri? Really solid in the minor leagues.
Vaguely, yeah.
Didn't really profile that much in the major leagues. He never really got that much of a shot as a Red. And they ended up, they couldn't add him to the 40-man. I think he was a Rule 5 draftee for the Astros. Went to the World Series with the Astros. Played a little bit for the Rays last year. Like, he's bounced around a little bit. There's a possibility that could happen with Stuart Fairchild. But I think at the end of the day, he's not going to make this roster. And it's not because he's underrated. I think the Reds understand that he's okay. He's all right. And I don't necessarily think that there's that much of an upside when it comes to what he could offer the Reds in the outfield.
You know, it boils down to if they're going to carry six outfielders or not. And I don't think they will. And if somebody moves off of the infield to the outfield. But right now, you know, like we talked about maybe yesterday, day before, I think if you were to look at the outfield right now and what's most likely for opening day, they're going to carry five guys. It's going to be a platoon of Fraley and Pinder. It's going to be a platoon of Friedel and Senzel. And then it's going to be Will Myers in right. I think that's probably the way the outfield shakes out right now. If we had to name the opening day outfield group, right now, I think that's what I would go with. Now, that could change if they get crazy and move India, or if Matt McClain suddenly finds himself a center fielder, or like there's some caveats there. But I think that for me, if I had to pick a group right now, that's how I'd go with it.
Yeah, I think that the only you can make an argument between Pender and Solak, but again, we're talking about, you know, six one, half dozen the other here. This isn't that big of an argument, and I don't think that there's that many guys that are separating themselves in this argument currently. The opening day outfield is going to look nothing like the final game of the year outfield.
I agree, and I think that probably that's a spot to wrap it up, Jeff. Go ahead and bring us home.
I like it. And thanks, everybody, for joining us here on this live Aloha Friday edition of the podcast. Thank you so much for your questions and your comments. We are here every Friday at 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time on the Locked On Reds YouTube channel. But that's going to do it for us here today. Now make sure you go check out Locked On MLB Prospects, as Lindsey Crosby has you covered on every farm system. He has gone through every single farm system in the major leagues throughout this offseason, breaking down every team succinctly and talking about the key prospects to look out for in 2023. Locked On MLB Prospects is just like Locked On Reds. It's free and available on all platforms. And as we get closer to pitchers and catchers reporting, we will expand to 5 days a week. That's going to start the week of February 13th. So make sure you stick here with us. Make sure you're subscribed. You've got the bell clicked to be notified whenever we've got new content for you. Because why, Steve?
Because we are going to keep you locked on Reds every single day.